SiriusXM Radio presents, in conjunction with House of Athlete, I Am Athlete Tonight.
Here to discuss the particulars of this case is Odyssey legal analyst and creator of LeagueOfJustice.com, friend of the show, Amy Dash. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Man. Let's jump right into this now. Sure. Amy, my understanding is that today was merely a formality. Could you break it down for our listeners, like what happened with Brittany going out and pleading guilty today in Russia?
So essentially, Brittany really had no choice. There's a 99% conviction rate over in Russia. But even if all of the stuff wasn't going on in the background, so everything going on with Ukraine, the fact that she's an American citizen, the fact that she's Black, the fact that she's gay, all these things that people say may have biased the process, there would still be an extremely high likelihood, almost a guarantee, that she would have been convicted had she tried to stage a defense. So the way that it works is obviously opposite of where it works here, where you have to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. It's almost as if you're guaranteed a conviction if you're going to challenge the system. And especially in her case, where, you know, they want to prove that there's respect for the law, that the law has authority, especially against people coming into the country, especially for their drug laws, because they're extremely strict with drugs. They have over 100,000 people, maybe even more, who are incarcerated for drug offenses. So the fact that they caught her with these vapors, I believe it was cannabis oil in vape cartridges, for her to go in and let's say one of her defenses would be, I didn't have that. Obviously, she had it, right? They caught her with it. There's video of it. So she can't go that route. So she didn't have a lot of choices because she possessed the drugs. She was going into the country with the drugs. So almost on its face, you know, how is she going to defend against that? She really did not have a choice but to plead guilty. And they want to see her accept responsibility. To be honest with you, they do not want to see their laws and their legal system challenged, because it's a cultural thing over there. You know, if you challenge it, it's a sign of disrespect for those laws.
Amy, I have a question, you know, and you know, I, you know, played in the league and we understand, you know, having to go overseas and play and you know, one of the Article 228 over in Russia obviously says, you know, if you have 6 grams of drugs, then it's a what we would call a misdemeanor. And 7 grams is a criminal defense. And so they said from the beginning, obviously, that she had more than 7 grams, that they were already threatening, 10 years for her. But excuse me. My question is, where does she go from here? Like, what do you actually think her chances are? Let's take away, you know, we can bring up the Paul Whelan thing. We can bring up the swapping of the prisoners and things like that.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, I think it's important that, you know, Americans, that we don't look at this case like we would in America, because we can't. Their laws are totally different than ours. They approach things so totally different. So yeah, in some of our states, this is legal, right? And so we're automatically saying we should free her. We should free her because cannabis is legal, but it's illegal over there. So she did something illegal. You know, where do you think she goes from there? What do you think the outcome is? Do you think she gets time? Do you think she's swapped? It'd be interesting to hear from you about that.
Yeah, thanks. So, you know, I just want to preface the answer to that question with giving a little history about our legal system, because actually we have really harsh laws, especially towards African American people. If you go look at the history of the Rockefeller laws here, and those were reformed, but let's not forget that there were a lot of people who were imprisoned for 20 years or more for minor drug offenses. And a lot of these people were mothers who had to feed their children, single mothers, who ended up falling prey to, you know, being the go-between for drug dealers and basically being the couriers of drugs, because they got a couple $1,000s and that would feed their family, and they were apprehended and the drug dealers went free, but they were sentenced to decades in prison. And so a lot of people are still serving time for that. So it's not, you know, extremely different. I would say the biggest difference is culturally, you know, being able to challenge the system. I would say there's less tolerance for challenging the laws, challenging the system, especially if you're a foreign citizen over there. But in terms of what happens, I've said this a bunch of times, and it's unfortunate. I just think she's in a really, really bad situation right now. That's the reality of it. Because of what's going on, it was horrible timing. Not to say that it would have been so much different, but obviously things are so much worse now because of what's going on with the war, with the fact that the U.S. imposed sanctions basically has been supporting and helping to arm Ukraine. So it's bad. Now, listen, I don't like you said in the beginning of the show, there's still a process that has to play out. So even if there were to be a prisoner swap, that wouldn't happen until she's sentenced. So she could potentially be spending several more months at least there. Then if she's sentenced, for them to do a prisoner swap right away, that would send a really bad message if you're Russia, that people can come into the country, violate the drug laws, and then not serve a day in prison, because I don't even think they're going to count, you know, the time that was served waiting for the sentence.
They're not going to count that?
I don't think they are. I think they want to set an example that once she's sentenced, she's serving some time before they're just immediately releasing her. I just don't think it looks good politically for them to immediately release her. Now, that being said, the U.S. and the president can try to say, hey, you know, you really want this arms dealer, Victor Bout, and he's been serving for a long time and his family maybe wants him home right away. And if you're willing to do a swap for that prisoner or for another prisoner, we've got to do it within such and such time. So President Biden can say, if you want to do the swap, it's got to be on our terms and it's got to be within the next month or whatever. He can try to speed it up. Mm. I just think that they're going to have an interest in having her serve some additional time rather than just immediately releasing her, just in terms of optics.
You listen to Odyssey legal analyst Amy Dash. Amy, I want to ask you this question. Here in America, you know, if your maximum sentence is 10 years, more than likely, logistically, you're going to do one third of that sentence. Mm-hmm. Is Russia working along the same timetable pretty much on their sentencing guidelines?
So I don't think so. If you challenge the charge, the fact that she pled guilty is just a strategic move to basically say, hey, listen, I pled guilty to possession and smuggling. Okay, I was possessing, that's undeniable, but I was not operating a large scale drug distribution network here. I'm not a drug smuggler. This is something I was using for my personal use. And what she said in her plea is, I did not have the intent to do this. This was a mistake. I was packing hastily and it ended up in the luggage, basically saying, you know, there was no malice here, that I didn't give this any forethought where I was planning to do this. And because she did that, she's hoping that there will be leniency in the sentence, you know, and sometimes in Russia for just mere possession, there will be like, 480 hours of community service or even 2 years or 3 years of restricted freedom in jail, but not 10 years. And so the hope is that, okay, I plead guilty to all the charges to show respect and take accountability and give them what they want and show them what they want. And then maybe they're only going to sentence me on possession and it's just going to be 2 years or 3 years instead of 10.
This is I Am Athlete Tonight. I am your host, Lee J. Dulzible, with my squad, Omar Kelly and Auntie Chantel Trimeter. And we're talking to Odyssey legal analyst and creator of LeagueOfJustice.com, Amy Daz, speaking about the Brittany Griner situation, her, you know, pleading guilty to drug smuggling charges in Russia. I know, Auntie, you had another question for Amy. Go ahead.
Yeah, Amy, I don't want to, you know, let's not make it political, right? But it's hard not to considering what's going on in the world. But what do you make of the Paul Whelan family being upset and saying, well, wait a minute, the president is sending letters to Brittany Griner and Paul has been over there since 2018. You know, I know it puts him in a horrible situation because you can't get Brittany out, right, without getting him out, right? Doesn't that send a crazy kind of message? You know, does that make it more political? You know, and I agree with you. I think she does do some additional time. But, you know, everyone at first they were telling all of the WNBA players, you know, let's not say anything. And then it was more of, okay, we're not saying anything, it's not getting anything done. So let's start blasting this out. Free Britney, free Britney. And now Russia's saying, look, America, y'all gotta be quiet. Talking
about, it was a mistake.
You need to stop talking about her fate and things like that. So, you know, what's your take on that?
I do think it was a mistake to start being vocal about it and make such a big deal about it, only because it raises the profile. And now with the situation that we're in terms of the standoff between Russia, Ukraine, and the United States and the alliances there, I think it shows Russia, empowers Russia to say, okay, now we have something that they really want. So we can basically ask for whatever we want. And then they can raise the stakes, maybe ask for more people in the prisoner swap, or maybe even cross the boundary of saying, we don't just want a prisoner swap. We want you to lift sanctions, or we want you to stop doing XYZ, you know, in terms of strategy with the war. So I think it was a mistake because it makes her seem more valuable. On the other hand, there really wasn't much choice,
right?
Because nothing was being done and they wanted to put political pressure on the White House. The White House really should have been more responsive behind the scenes to avoid this type of publicity in order to pressure them to act. But I think that actually for people who have been labeled at least wrongful detainees over in Russia, this helps them. The publicity helps those people whose cases may have never gotten attention from the president. Or maybe if Britney had gone about things behind the scenes, the president would have tried to help her without feeling pressure to help them. And then by the time their publicity and stories got out, it might have been too late for him to go back, because how many prisoner swaps are realistically going to take place, right? So now their cases have heightened in profile. And now there's pressure on the president that, okay, if you do a prisoner swap, you've got to do a couple people and not just Britney. But again, then that makes it more difficult, because it's not just for Britney, right? It's for now two people or three people. And now, how are they going to manage that? Like, are they going to be just sending arms dealers and dangerous people across it?
Right.
And that's the other thing. You have to look at, you know, I hate to say it this way, this is horrible, but this is just realistically what it is. There's a value on a person when you're doing a prisoner swap.
Right.
So is Britney worth the arms dealer? Is Britney plus Paul Whelan worth the arms dealer? You know, that type of a weighing of value of, they're like almost like commodities. I hate to say it, but the United States, you know, now that things have become political, these are the things that they have to think about, unfortunately. But I mean, obviously, to the people who love Britney, it's just a horrible situation, because she's a human being, obviously, who's very loved by a lot of people, and they don't see it that way. But politically, there's a lot of strategy that's going to be involved in how to delicately handle this, given the circumstances.
Right. In her eyes, she's worth everything. And
of course,
in the political eyes, she may not be.
Well, Amy, hopefully really, she is.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm talking about as far as like the arms dealer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but the one good thing about the arms dealer, I mean, he's called like the Merchant of Death, and actually Lord of War, the Nicolas Cage movie, was based on this guy. However, the judge actually spoke to a publication today and said, you know, I wouldn't have even sentenced this guy to 25 years. The judge has sentenced him. He said, I would have given him 10, but I was mandated to give 25 under the sentencing guidelines. And I don't even think he'd be that dangerous if he was sent back, because he's lost all of his contacts and he never really showed intent. There was no evidence that he was, you know, doing more than just trying to personally benefit from selling weapons. So there was really not a lot of evidence showing he was targeting terrorist organizations, even though he knew he was selling possibly to one, that wasn't like an overarching plan of his. So, you know, I mean, he's
come
called
on
the
Amy. Death, once an arms dealer, always an arms dealer.
Hey, Amy, we truly appreciate your honesty. One final question, right? I know earlier you were talking about, you know, potentially, I guess, best case scenario, she could get community service, or maybe even, what'd you say, in protective in-house jail time for like 2 to 3 years. I think you said something along those lines. What is the percentage you think that actually happens, or does she, you know, get the maximum time of 10 years? Like, what do you think the percentages for each one would be?
You know, it really depends. I'm gonna like go out on a limb here and say, I think that the judges in Russia may not be entirely independent. They may be influenced.
You think?
Maybe influenced by the people in power politically, different from what happens here, obviously, as we've seen recently with the Supreme Court, right? That's not being influenced necessarily by the Biden administration. So because of that, I really think this is all going to come down to the relationship between the United States, Russia, and, you know, whether we have and can offer things that they really want. I think she may get 2 to 3 years, which is, by the way, which is a lot of time for that amount of drugs. So she may get a couple of years, but whether or not she'll have to serve them will come down to how much the U.S. is willing to offer to get her home.
Do they have like work release or good time off for good behavior in Russia?
Mm-hmm. See, I don't think any of that stuff is going to really matter, to be honest.
Yeah, that's labor camps. This labor camps over in
it's
Russia.
Like 2 years in labor camp or 3 years of restricted freedom. I think because of the amount that they're saying that she had, I think that's also a big problem. Mm. And of course, like I said, all the inherent biases that are going to come into it. She's not, I would guess she's not a sympathetic defendant because of potentially racial biases, sexual biases, foreigner biases. There's just so much stacked against her right now. And there's so much going on right now that in terms of what's angering Russia towards the United States. And unfortunately, she was caught right in the middle of it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Amy. That's Amy Dash, Odyssey legal analyst and creator of LeagueOfJustice.com, speaking about Brittany Griner's situation in Russia. We truly appreciate you coming in and really educating us and our listeners.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
You never know who'll step inside the green room with Danny Green.
Jamal Crawford's in here.
You are always hell to deal with. I mean, people always talk about the Kobe's and, you know, the Iversons and guys I matched up with. And you bring so much to the game. Keep going, bro. Go as long as you can. You know, being on this side of it. I love this part in the transition, but absolutely, there's nothing like when the popcorn's popping and you're performing on stage and hitting that big shot.
Listen and subscribe to Inside the Green Room with Danny Green, wherever you get your podcast.
And now that Baker Mayfield has been traded to the Carolina Panthers for a conditional draft pick, could be a fourth or fifth round pick. Let's recap what the Panthers have done over the past several years. First, they cut Cam Newton. They signed Teddy Bridgewater, traded for Sam Darnold, traded away Teddy Bridgewater, signed Cam Newton again, drafted Matt Corral, and then traded for Baker Mayfield. Let me throw it to my teammate, Omar Kelly, who has been covering the NFL forever. Is Baker Mayfield entering a more dysfunctional situation than he was in Cleveland?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at who is the coach on the hottest seat in the NFL,
it's probably Matt Rhule.
It's Matt, it is without a doubt Matt Rhule. Mm-hmm. I just don't, and he knew that the only solution to that was to get a quarterback that he could invest in and sort of say, see, believe in this young man. You see the development. We're taking that next step. Now, I'm glad he pivoted off the Sam Darnold train, because that Sam Darnold train was headed
that train
for,
been left.
That it was headed for a head-on collision. Yeah. But Baker Mayfield, and keep in mind, I like Baker Mayfield. I think a lot of the problems that he had.
Hold on.
Last
didn't
year,
you call this man an Airbnb quarterback?
For this situation.
Quarterback?
He's a rental right now. Think about it. From Carolina's standpoint, he's a rental. They even got a discount on him.
They did get a huge discount.
I wouldn't even give up that discount. If I'm Cleveland, I'm not paying that. I eat half of your salary. Like, I'm not paying $10 million.
Well, I think originally Carolina was willing to pay for half. And then as time went on, they were like, well, nah, we ain't paying for half no more. And to Baker's point, right, this is a big move by him because he's betting on himself.
Yes.
He decided to take essentially a $3.5 million pay cut to make sure this deal went forward and he got traded to Carolina. But Carolina's only on the hook for right under $5 million for Baker Mayfield. So,
I mean, but they
honestly,
also,
that's a great deal. But
they're still on the hook for $18 million. So
between the two of them, they're paying about, what, $23 million between the two of them?
That's a ridiculous amount for mediocre quarterbacks. But I like the weaponry that he has, DJ Moore. Yeah. I like
Robbie Anderson. They also has, you know, Christian McCaffrey.
They've got a decent offensive line. They probably could do a little bit more from an offensive line standpoint.
But they've actually done a pretty good job. They brought in Corbett from the Rams, who Baker Mayfield knows well because they were drafted the same year in Cleveland, and then he got traded to the Rams. They also took Ikwunu, right? In the first round, he's going to be their left tackle, and you know Taylor at right tackle to me is one of the best right tackles in football. So I mean they've done some things to kind of try to shore up that offensive line. I think this team really struggled when Christian McCaffrey went down. It literally, like Matt Rule is praying that Christian McCaffrey stays healthy because the team and the trajectory of the team changed totally once he went down. I believe they were 3-1, maybe even 4-1 when the season started when Christian McCaffrey was healthy and he was putting up numbers. Soon as he got banged up, Sam Darnold and the offense looked atrocious, right? And they have a really good young defense, right? So this is a team that, you know, the NFC South, besides literally, I would say the Tampa Bay Bucks, everybody else. Yeah. I mean, Jameis had the Saints looking good before he got hurt, but you don't know without their head coach, you know, Sean Payton not being there, what it's going to look like. So let's go with the auntie.
You know Dennis Allen's record?
It's trash.
It's 8-24.
Yeah, it's trash. Auntie, do you think Baker's going to a more dysfunctional situation in Carolina?
No, because at least they know who their quarterback's going to be, right? It's going to be Baker. You know why? You know, and it's hard for me to say good things about Baker, being a Steeler fan and him used to be with the Browns, but now that he's gone, I can say some good things. But, you know, he did have a torn labrum, and he tried to fight through it for the last, year and a half. But, you know, I think he's going into a great situation, especially like you said, if Christian McCaffrey can stay healthy, you got a great back behind you. You got some really good weapons, like Omar was saying. And wouldn't it be great? And I know you want to get into the question of, you know, will Deshaun play? You know, most likely, I don't think he plays the first game. And the first game the Panthers play is the Browns. And so that September 11th game is going to be amazing. And you talk about, you know, he took a $3.5 million pay cut. I think if he goes and if he beats Jacoby Brissett in the Browns that week one, that's a good start for him to earn a little bit of that money and that respect.
That's my favorite quarterback.
Listen, I'm glad you brought up Jacoby Brissett.
That's because his favorite quarterback.
If you are Cleveland right now, and I know Baker Mayfield, you probably had to move him because he's kind of a disgruntled child and he doesn't want to be there and he would have created a lot of commotion.
But well, they showed they didn't want him either, though, Omar.
Yes, they did.
You gave somebody $230 million in guaranteed money.
Just because the hot girl in the club is batting her eyes at you does not mean that your girlfriend is ugly.
Nah, the hot girl in the club said that she would go home with you.
Okay.
And took off her clothes in front of you. That's what they did with that $230 million contract.
Yes.
go ahead.
But Jacoby Brissett, is that really what you're riding for the whole season? Think about where you are if you're the Cleveland Browns.
You in the AFC also
give like some pause to say that maybe they feel like Deshaun's not going to be suspended as long as people initially thought he was going to be suspended?
They must be living in delusional land.
Right. Yeah, the NFL's asking for a year.
Some things. Honestly, I think it might be 6 to 8 games.
If it's short of 8 games, I'll be shocked. If it's short of 8
I know we
games,
both said we thought it was going to be 8 to 12. Everybody I've talked to, it looked like it could be 6 to 8.
But that NFL wants him to be suspended for the year.
Yeah, that's a wrong message to the women supporters of this league.
Absolutely.
NFL will not slap him on the wrist and let him continue to play the majority of the season. I think he's doing half a season at least. Talking about half.
Yeah, right. And not just, you know what, Omar, not just the women of the league, you know, the women of America, right? Because we don't know, some of these massage therapists might not have been NFL fans or whatever, but, you know, regardless of what happens, you're right. There's a huge difference between Deshaun Watson and Jacoby Brissett. You know, I think that whether Baker has stepped into a more dysfunctional organization, you know, it will be remains to be seen. But I think he's better off out of Cleveland and out of that whole Deshaun Watson mess.
Here's the thing. I always remember, and I think I've said this before, and I am an athlete tonight. I cover the Dolphins, and I remember Adam Gase, who, you know, depending on which fan base you are, you've got fond or laughable memories.
He took them
to
the playoffs one year.
Yes.
Right.
I don't think Gase is as bad of a coach as a lot of people think. Maturity is not there. But getting to my point, I remember when Baker Mayfield was coming out in the draft and he was not projected as the number one pick, but I knew Adam Gase had this obsession for him because of the talent and the intangible and really the persona. Their personalities match up so well, which is why Gase loved him. And it's funny because both of them have maturity issues. And I don't think that will ever change with people like that. So even though Baker's on a one-year audition, think about if things go left or go wrong and Matt Rhule is fired or and then Baker's got his laundry list of excuse. This is potentially the season that could basically dictate how his career goes
from now on. This is that season 100%. But the thing is, like, and we had this conversation about Carson Wentz yesterday.
Somebody's gonna take
they're gonna take a chance, but he'll never be gifted the starting role again. Yeah. Right? He'll have to compete just like Carson Wentz in Washington, right? I believe this is his last opportunity to just be gifted the starting role. If he doesn't go out there and do what he needs to do, helps them get over the hump, get into the playoffs, I believe he'll have to compete from now on to be a starter in this league. And I think
a quarterback has to compete.
But we so quickly just hand jobs to people.
But you know, Baker did take the Browns to the playoffs, right? He did it with a torn labrum and things like that. And so, you know, does he have a little bit of immaturity? Yeah, but I think he just likes to have fun. He was like that with Oklahoma. Look how much success he had with Oklahoma. You know, I think he's gonna do well
He's got to view this as a put up or shut up season.
Yeah, it just from his point of view, it's got to suck to have this happen so late. And I commend him for being willing to take that $3.5 million pay cut that he can get in incentives, but just to make sure this deal goes through. Because as we talked about Omar, he's already up against the eight ball. He missed all the offseason workouts, all the OTA practices, right? He's, you know, getting the playbook, what, 2 or 3 weeks before training camp starts, hasn't learned the nuances, the terminology.
Yeah, Sam Darnold's licking his chops.
Hasn't get that continuity with the receivers. He's already behind the eight ball, and this is Sam Darnold's second year in this offense. So he's got a lot of catch up to do.
What happens if – I'd like to hear you guys answer this question.
Yeah.
And I'm stealing it from you. What happens to Jimmy Garoppolo now? Where does he go?
That's a good question. We actually kind of touched on this yesterday. Honestly, I think he's going to end up in San Francisco. I mean, there's been rumors out of San Francisco that they're not all the way in on Trey Lance. Now, I know they excused Jimmy Garoppolo from minicamp, but then again, he wasn't going to do anything anyway at minicamp. So why have him there answering questions when he's injured and he can't do anything anyway? I mean, the money he's making isn't absurd.
$25 million, though, but it's also a rental. He is a Verbo quarterback. Right? So teams don't want to really pay it. And only team in my mind really now that is in the market for a quarterback could be only Seattle and Atlanta. I know you see, look, I said Seattle.
But one, they're not going to trade him within the division. That'd be absurd.
Yeah, he ain't going to Seattle.
That is true.
The Miami Dolphins, who just got hired there?
Teddy Bridgewater is there now.
But I'm just saying the offensive coordinator is really comfortable with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Miami Dolphins got a better quarterback situation than New York Jets. Calm down.
I'm just saying. All right. So if you had Jimmy, Teddy, or Tua, who are you taking right now?
I'm a Jimmy Garoppolo guy.
So you're taking Jimmy. That's what I'm saying. Right.
I could take him as a free agent next year.
Who needs the quarterback the most this year?
I mean, Seattle would be a team that comes to mind.
Atlanta
could be up there with Mariota, and you know, they took Desmond Ridder in the draft.
Yeah.
So that's a potential as well. I mean, I think Miami's an intriguing team.
Not trade for him.
Not in Omar's eyes. You know, that ain't happening. But if Jimmy Garoppolo stays in San Francisco, do you see maybe Seattle or Atlanta or whatever
trying to go after Cam Newton, so I don't think that trade would ever happen.
But do you think any of those teams try to go after Cam Newton? Or do you think he's done in Carolina? Can't keep him.
Open communication with Cam Newton in Carolina before the Baker Mayfield trade. So there was some potential that he could end up back in Carolina. But with them trading for, you know, Baker Mayfield, that ship has sailed. So it's crazy like how you know, how I want to say how quickly you can fall in the NFL because he's played a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I always thought from day one Cam Newton would finish as a Carolina Panther. When he went to New England, it just didn't even look right to me.
Yeah,
like,
right.
He's a Carolina Panther through and through. So it was just a surprise.
But his profile is bigger than his performance, and that's really the issue. I think Cam needs to go someplace where it's just okay to be a backup.
Yeah.
And if he wants to continue to play, I think his profile is just too high. Yeah. And I watched him when he was with New England and I watched him play the Dolphins and oh my God, they just teed off on him. He has nothing left as a quarterback.
Well, I don't think if you're saying that Cam is his profile is too big, I don't think Cam wants to be a backup. I think it's him saying, you know what? If I'm not a starting quarterback, I'm done. And let me just go do some other stuff.
But to Omar's point, his personality, his bravado, his stature.
The Superman stature.
It's like, that's something you just can't tone down. He just has that it factor. So, like, coming into the locker room, even if he's the backup, everybody's going to think he's the starter just the way he carries himself. So,
right. But Superman.
Bringing him in as a backup.
Right. But Superman's not Robin, right? Superman never had to play back fiddle to anyone like Robin had to play back fiddle
to Batman.
And I don't know.
Cam Newton reminds me a lot of Matt Ryan is kind of entering that realm where
Why does Matt Ryan go out there and cook this year?
Yeah, you can't compare Matt Ryan to Cam Newton.
Matt Ryan finna go, they're gonna run the football, he gonna make the throws that Carson Wentz couldn't make last year.
Wow.
I think Matt Ryan is gonna take them to the playoffs. I think he's gonna take them to the playoffs.
Until he gets to the playoffs. Then old Matt Ryan,
good O-line, he'll be all right.
Yeah, that's true. Good O-line, no real weapons, but yeah.
What you mean? They got one of the best weapons in the backfield in Jonathan Taylor.
I'm talking about wide receivers.
You want to give him the ball 90% of the time.
Pittman, nice. You tripping? I like Alec Pierce, who they took from Cincinnati too in the draft. So it'll be interesting to see. This is I Am Athlete Tonight. I am your host, Lee J. Doosable, with my squad, Omar Kelly and Auntie Chantel Trimeter. We were talking about Baker Mayfield getting traded to the Carolina Panthers. Now let's go into college football, and the college football landscape is literally all over the place. As suspected for the past several years, college football is headed in the direction of super conferences. Let's do a quick recap. USC and UCLA will join the Big Ten in 2024. Oklahoma, Texas will join the SEC in 2025. And reportedly, the Big 12 are looking to add six schools to their conference, potentially Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, Colorado, Oregon, and Washington. Omar Kelly, are super conferences a good or bad thing for college football?
It's a good thing because it gets us to the next round in the next realm, which is, gosh, dog it, we need a playoff.
And they have a playoff right now.
Come on, man.
But you're talking about like an 18 playoff.
I'm talking about a 16-team playoff.
Oh, God. They might as well start the season off there.
I want a 16-team tournament.
You're trying to hurt these young boys. You're trying to stop them from getting their money at the next level. That's what you're trying to do. Because now you got to think the 16th team, right? You see, that dude wouldn't even played in the bowl game. He getting ready for the league. Now he got to, if they win, he got to potentially play four more games.
I didn't say that 16 team and winner and ever fight to the end. We playing 16 teams, and then we're going to rank them again, and then we're going to keep it moving.
That's what I'm saying. So go 16 to 8 to 4 to 2. So what if you're the 16 team and now you keep winning?
I think we go from 16 to maybe 6.
I would love to see how you do this.
with 2 sitting it out. And then we go.
So they get first round buys.
They get first round
this
buys.
This is hilarious.
Here's the thing. We got to think creatively here. Yeah. We got.
In other words, you're putting these young boys at risk. Auntie, what do you think?
Look, the Fox owns.
They getting paid now.
The Big Ten, right? SEC is owned by, right, ESPN.
Mm-hmm. Auntie's smelling it. Auntie, she got the scent.
I'm disagreeing with you because I actually think it's going to be bad for college football. Not only, you know, what happens to a team like Notre Dame?
That's a good question.
Geographical regions and like rivalries, they mean far less, right?
100%.
You know, it's not about like, what about, you know, are we really going to have to see like Rutgers go all the way out to LA and hold play on, a 9 a.m. game. Going.
They're in the Big Ten right now, bro. Oh,
and have to go all the way out to LA. Like, and so there ain't going to be no more team buses. It's always going to be
USC now.
Yeah, it's always going to be
every sport, not just football.
No, but we're talking about football. We're talking about football right now. And here's
the thing. Football players can get on a chartered plane, whereas the soccer team, they might have to ride up. It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
But follow the money. You're right, Auntie. The television networks, they own these conferences. This is about the big TV deals. And ultimately, it's about survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
I covered the University of Miami when they went from the Big East, which most people don't even remember existed.
Yeah, I do.
To
Boston College was in there, Syracuse.
Yeah, to the ACC. And that was about safety and finances. Yeah. And right now, if you're not at a conference that's providing you safety and finances, you're looking to get out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens to Notre Dame, because I believe that lockout year they joined the ACC just for 1 year, but I think they would fare well in the Big Ten. I think they are a Big Ten type team, so we'll see what happens to, you know, these super conferences in the next few years in college football.
I Am Athlete Tonight is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. Support I Am Athlete Tonight with a 5-star rating and by leaving a review. That's a big deal, guys. Stop being lazy. Pick up your phones and leave a review and give us a 5-star rating. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast. Want more? Catch the full 2 hours of I Am Athlete Tonight weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Mad Dog Sports Radio, SiriusXM Channel 82. Go to SiriusXM.com/IAA Tonight trial to start your free trial today.
SiriusXM Podcasts.